If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hey, before we dive into this week's episode, I want to tell you about the new book of poetry by Mike Posner called Teardrops and Balloons. So you may know him as a total wash-up pop star with a couple of songs that you frankly don't even like. But this book will come as a shock to you. I've read pieces of it, and it's unbelievable. He takes on the topics of fame, God, masturbation, horses, death, dating, Bruno Mars, plane crashes, and chewing gum. Basically, no stone is left unturned. It's available March 17th at Amazon and also MikePosner.com. Trust me, this is a really, really fun read from a person that you would be like, oh, why is he going to be interesting? Why is this book going to be interesting? Trust me, it is. So dive into it and enjoy. Hey, hello. I'm Ray Harkins. You're listening to 100 Words or Less, the podcast, and I apologize in advance. My voice is shot, and that's because, I was yelling into a microphone for about 6 or 7 hours. So, I'm old, and that's what happens. But, thank you for listening. You are joining us because you care about independent music, you like the people that are involved with it, and you want to find out more about them. So that's why you're here, right? And you're here specifically to hear the story of Kevin Jordan from This Wild Life. This Wild Life is quite a large band, and I actually got in touch with him via Twitter because he listened to the show on late night drives as they were touring around the country. And I always love that. I like the fact that I can, hang out with people on a one-sided relationship, keeping them company about whatever it is that they're doing. So I always enjoy that. And so Kevin reached out and was like, hey, man, this would be fun if I was on. And I was like, you're right. This would be fun if you were on. And then I come to find out that we have a ton of other connections, mutual friends, and all that other good stuff that you just find out once you get to know people involved in independent music. But I have a ton of house cleaning stuff I want to get up out of the way. And I'll also preload this by saying, when I had the conversation with Kevin, I had my voice. So if you're like, holy crap, I can't stand this, squeaky dude's voice, you could totally fast forward and it's normal at that point. But anyways, two things I would like for you to do. For one, Jabberjaw Media, which is the podcast network that I'm a part of, they have launched, I think, 4 or 6 new shows. And you need to go to their website and check out all their great stuff that they have going on. One of the shows is by a previous guest of the show, Doc Coyle from God Forbid. He does a show. And there's just a lot of great content. So I promise you, if you like this show, there are other shows on the network that you will absolutely enjoy. And I'm just excited to be a part of this cool content aggregator That sounds like the most like business minded description of a podcast network I've ever heard. But yeah, they just got good stuff going on. So please, please, please go visit them, go visit the website, and then check out all the shows, because I promise, like, what's interesting about podcasts is, like, once you find one show you like, you start to, it's exactly the same as bands. You start to find out about, you know, record labels or other shows, and it's just, it's so much fun. So I encourage you to do that as well. I also need you to, if you are a hardcore podcast nerd, which I completely put myself in, a lot of those people use a player called Overcast. And that's something where basically instead of the podcast app that you download on, or that's already pre-downloaded on your iPhone, you can dive into the App Store and download Overcast. And it's basically just a more, you know, a robust player. You have a lot of more options. And anyways, what I want you to do is, if for one, if you use Overcast, please recommend this show. So every time a new show pops up from 100 words, you just basically give it a little star, because the more that happens, the more it gets recommended in these sort of categories. And I just really want that to happen for the show. So please download Overcast if you haven't used it. It's an unbelievable service. It's free, but then there's also like a $5 premium thing that you can pay for that will, you know, strip out ads and stuff. So yeah, please do that. If you use Overcast, please press the little star button. Just do that on every single episode. And then hopefully the show will bubble up and be included on the recommendations of certain genres. This would be in the music category. And I just want that, you know, so can you help me? So anyways, enough of that. And here is Kevin Jordan. Like I said, he plays in This Wild Life. He also played in a band called The Greenery a long time ago. Well, not a long time ago, but you know, that's where I first ran across him. And we just have a really open, fun, frank conversation about, you know, life on the road, being in a band that's successful, because he was never expecting that out of this project that he's doing right now. So yeah, great stuff. And without further delay or squeaky voiceness, here is my discussion with Kevin.
The entry point for myself into you, I mean, now that I have a little bit more of your history and the fact that we obviously have met in passing before.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to visit the idea of, so you, how long did you play drums in The Greenery for?
Probably like close to 2 years. It was really, really early on. So it was like right when we first formed. I actually like named the band.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, we were in high school.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And you were going to school in Long Beach, I presume, then, yeah?
Yep.
Okay. And is that where, like, I know that you made a recent move to Arizona, but was your family from Long Beach as well? Is that kind of where your home base was?
Yeah. Well, I was raised in there. I was actually born out in Arizona, but I was raised in Long Beach since I was like 1 year old. So.
Okay. Got it. And so you did. Because people, I mean, most people hear the word Long Beach and they automatically think of like Snoop Dogg, or maybe some people that have a deep history like know that. Because wasn't Tupac was from Long Beach too? Am I crazy about that or no?
I think he's more from like South Central, like LA or somewhere.
Yeah, I'm being stupid. I'm sorry. That was completely my fault. I should know that because of my mid '90s or early '90s gangster rap era, but.
I'm wearing a Death Row Records shirt right now, so I should definitely know, but I don't.
Yeah, dude, you rule. So, like, you know, most people don't really know like what Long Beach is kind of, you know, all about. Like, it is a suburb of LA, but it's also considered part of LA. Did you like, I guess, growing up in Long Beach and kind of feeling a big city vibe, but not the tall skyscraper city vibe?
Yeah, I dig it. I'm honestly not a fan of LA whatsoever. It's just totally not my speed, and I don't like traffic or expensive things or paying for parking. So I think Long Beach is like a really good, like a happy medium. And I was always stoked to live there.
That's awesome. Yeah, definitely. So many people that don't want to move to LA live in Long Beach because they're just like, yeah, I could never do Los Angeles, but I feel comfortable enough being in Long Beach so I don't have to die on all my commutes into LA or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. It's cool because it's like, it's kind of right there in between Orange County and LA, and it actually, I think the culture of it is actually pretty close to being in between those two places as well. So it's kind of a neat spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, I always love, because I mean, this doesn't really happen very much anymore where, you know, people generally speaking know where record labels are from as far as like, oh, you know, I know that Run for Cover's from Boston, or I know that, you know, these labels exist in certain scenes, but very rarely do you see, you know, I guess local bands signing with the label that exists within their, you know, geographical area. So like when you, because I just didn't have any idea that you guys were from Long Beach until, you know, I did some research and was like, oh, like when you guys first signed to Epitaph, the and I presume you know, like you shared with me in the past, that there was no notion that working with Epitaph was even a remote possibility, right?
No, I mean, we had like a what we call a short list, but it was really like even our biggest reach for contacting labels to see if they'd be interested in releasing our record, you know, that wasn't even on the short list, because it was just like that seemed like such a pipe dream that it wasn't even worth putting on, you know, on a fucking Google document. It wasn't even worth it.
Right, like the idea of just like, yeah, we could write this name, but like, are we just gonna mail a demo to their PO box and it just gets like lost in the shuffle?
Exactly. It's like, you know, trying to sign to Capitol or Interscope or something like that. It's just, it seemed so unrealistic at the time.
Right. And it's so funny too, because so many people have these ideas of like how to get a record label's attention. And I'll never forget the many years that I worked at Century Media Records. I legitimately at one point had a band show up to our office to like meet with me and like hand deliver the demo. And I was just like, What a horrible idea. Like, I mean, even in your probably early naive state, you would know that like that is probably not the best way to like get someone's attention, right?
That's like Airheads in real life or something.
Dude, such an apt comparison. That's perfect. Yeah. I'll hijack the radio.
But
station.
I have heard of some people doing that, like waiting outside for somebody to walk out of a building. I actually, you know, the rapper J. Cole, he has a story about like waiting outside in the rain for like hours and hours for Jay-Z to walk out of a building, and handed him a demo and he never listened to it or something, you know. And then, you know, but later on he goes on to be a platinum selling artist, massive. So,
right.
I guess it could work, but I'll say I'm guilty. You know, I have a lot of people like hand me CDs on tour, and honestly, I don't have a way to play a CD. You know, I don't have a laptop. Our van doesn't have a CD player. And it's like, you know, sometimes we probably have in our merch bin, you know, like a dozen CDs and stuff. And I'm just like, fuck, I always tell people, like, can you like send me a link online? Cause I, you know, I check my Twitter every day and clicking a link is easy, but it's like, I have no idea how to play this.
Right.
And I say that to people while I'm standing outside of a venue trying to hustle CDs. So I'm, it's pretty hypocritical, but
you're like, can you buy this thing that you ostensibly can listen to at home, but I cannot listen to the thing that you will hand me that is the same format?
Right.
So do you, you just mentioned the fact that you, you know, you go out there and kind of try to hustle and you talk, like, you're an accessible dude, you know, like from the way that people interact with you, not only you, but obviously the entire band in general, there's really no, I guess, barriers there. Was that something that just kind of came naturally to you, or did you need to learn? And I don't mean to say sound like you're a robot and you had to learn how to interact with people, but the idea that, you know, the interactions between sometimes, you know, fans that are really, really connected to you might be a little bit overwhelming, because it's like, okay, hold on. I know I put my emotions out there, but like, I can't take all of this input in at once. Or how did that sit with you?
I think it was a pretty conscious decision. It was deliberate from the get-go of the band. We kind of looked at it like there was two ways to go about being a band and self-promoting. And we said, well, you could try to be like a brand new and be totally mysterious, never do any press, never do a single meet and greet, and just put the music out there and hope that the cream rises to the top. Or you could go the other way about it and, you know, kind of like what we think is take control of your own future and push things as hard as you can from your own standpoint. And we just felt like we're not going to wait around for people to discover us. We're not going to wait around for other people to do work for us. It's always just going to be, hey, what's the next kind of grind that we can do that will allow us to grow and allow us to share the music with new people.
I like that attitude, especially when you're talking about the idea of deliberately doing it and not like acting like a person that you're not, but just putting yourself out there in ways that I think are really probably disarming for certain people. Because I'm sure, you know, when they come up to, you know, you and want to interact with you and then you talk to them like a normal human being, they're probably like, whoa, wait a minute. Hey, you're just a dude. And you're probably just like, yeah, I'm just a total douche sitting up here on stage and just doing this the same as you. Like you could have done this as well.
I tell people all the time, like, if, you know, it's typically with like younger fans, I would say, because people that are, you know, like a little older, I think they already realize that just because you're in a signed band or something doesn't mean that you're untouchable or, you know, you're like this like rich person or something like that, where we have like no celebrity value whatsoever. But I think when younger kids meet us and I see that somebody is nervous, like I just find myself repeating, we are totally normal, totally boring dudes, and you have no reason to be, you know, shy or nervous around us right now.
Right. It is such an interesting, and I honestly, those interactions are so meaningful, because, you know, I'm sure both you and I can go back in our memory banks and realize like the anecdotal stories that we can share where it's like the barrier between the audience and the band gets broken down, where you're just like, oh yeah, they are just like a human being. Like there was one show where it was like, Strife is one of my favorite bands of all time, you know, straight edge hardcore band from LA. And I remember seeing them with the Voodoo Glow Skulls once at the Glass House in Pomona. And Rick Rodney, the singer, wasn't X'd up yet, because, like, you know, obviously a very deliberately straight edge band. And he asked the kids in the front row if they had a black marker to X up. And I had one. And I was like, yeah, I have one. And then I gave it to him. And then I was just like, oh my God, Rick Rodney used my marker. And he's like a real human being. And it's just like, you know, I'm sure you have those like moments where you realized, or do you have like a story like that, that you can kind of, you know, go back in your memory banks and realize like the barrier between the audience and the band is like non-existent?
Totally. So I'm a huge fan of a band called As Cities Burn. And on one of their first kind of national tours, it was actually the first shows that they played in California. They were on tour with a band called Dead Poetic, and they played at the Epicenter in San Diego. And we had gone down there because the night before they played at the Whiskey, we came to that show and we had talked to the guitarist at the time, Colin. And he just said to us, he's like, you know, if you guys want to come to the show tomorrow, we have guest list. And we're just like, holy shit, As Cities Burn just offered us guest list. This is nuts. You know, and we're all in high school at the time.
Right.
So we, like, my buddy Matt, who sings for the Greenery, he drove like his pops, like 72 Suburban. We all like drove down there. I think there was 8 or 9 of us in there, and we drove down, and went to the show and went absolutely fucking nuts for As Cities Burn. And nobody else knew who they were at the time. They were like the opener on the tour. But we had just been listening to that record for like the last week, just nonstop. Like literally the drive down, we were listening to it on repeat because we wanted to know all the words, you know? And after the show, the guys were just like, hey, you guys want to go get like burritos? There's like a cool place we want to go to. And we're like, holy shit, now they're asking us to go get burritos. This is insane. And they were just so down to earth, so cool with us on such like an early time for them. So I think they were still super excited about touring and excited about having eager fans like we were. Yeah. So that was this like really fucking unique experience that I've kind of held on to for a long time. And that's one of those bands that I constantly supported because of how fucking cool they were. And not only was their music great, but I just felt like they were really cool dudes, and they did a lot for me when I was a kid, as far as encouraging me to want to actually tour and adapt that lifestyle.
Yeah, no, that's an incredible story, because I think that those moments are so indicative of why you know, people like you and I have dedicated our lives to, you know, the celebration of independent music. Because, you know, you look at other music scenes and you don't really have those experiences. And what I mean, and I'm saying on like a more mainstream level, you know, that doesn't exist. And so like when you have these things that are so tangible and touchable, you until the day you die, you're just gonna be like, oh yeah, As Cities Burn, great band. Like, would never say anything bad about them because of that one singular guest list and burrito experience.
But I think that like the, you know, it swings the other way too, because there's been a a couple times, and I won't be like specific about this, but when you kind of meet somebody and you like what I always just call like humanize your hero, sometimes it's not all it's cracked up to be. And meeting the person that's kind of behind these songs and stuff, and sometimes it's if you don't care for the person once you meet them, it's hard to disassociate the person from the songs, and it can ruin it too. Like the same way that meeting somebody and having this great fan experience can be like take that music to the next level for you and make it even more special to you, it can go the other way and totally ruin a band for you.
Yeah.
So I try to be like as respectful to people as possible. And I always just say like whatever experience a fan coming to a show is looking for, whether it's just simply to watch us on stage and take off, or if they want us to, you know, sign up a poster that we have or take a picture, whatever they're looking for, I try to give it to them, because, you know, it's like for me, the experience that I'm looking for is to make records and play shows and travel. And the thing that's going to allow me to do that is for people to come out and kind of get what they're seeking. So I see it as like, you know, for me to get what I want, I need to try to give people what they want out of our band.
That's a healthy attitude, because I think that so many bands, like once you get to the level where you guys are at, where you're spending a majority of time on the road, and you know, home is something that is a foreign concept just because you're living in two different worlds. Sometimes the world that you live in, you know, the band and tour life, it becomes, you know, a normal part of the routine. And when it becomes, you know, quote unquote, less special, that's when you can kind of lose that, the plot of it, you know?
Yeah. There's definitely times, like, especially on something like Warped Tour, which is like a pretty grueling schedule, obviously. I call it just like going into autopilot when you're on tour. And I've definitely caught myself a few times just like, you know, somebody will maybe ask you a question or something, and you just have like this pre-programmed response where it's just like, oh, thank you so much. Like, who else are you excited to see? And then you realize they just asked you how your day was or something. It's like, oh, fuck, I'm just like a robot at this point.
Right.
You know, but that's not something where you're doing like, you know, we would do meet and greets on Warped every day, and, you know, a lot of bands would limit them or sell wristbands for them or whatever. And we just saw it as, hey, this is a really cool opportunity to meet a ton of people. And like I said, just kind of give them the experience that they're looking for. And so we would just do them for hours, and the line would just, you know, get a little bit smaller and then get a little bit longer, get a little smaller. And, you know, when you're standing out there in the heat, after a while, it's just like, you know, your brain just starts to kind of fry, and you have some of those weird experiences. But I love on club tours, you know, going out like while another band is playing. So most of the people are focused on, you know, who's playing on stage and stuff. And I can actually have a conversation with somebody, because I would rather personally meet, you know, five people a night and have a real conversation with each one of them than burn through a line of 100 or 200 people just trying to snag photos or something.
Yeah.
But like I said, I try to meet in the middle and give people the experience they're looking for so that we can continue to do what we love. But for me personally, I would rather, you know, if I had the option to just meet a handful of people a night and have a unique conversation with each one of them, that would be cool.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire, and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I like that. Yeah, and have it be less sort of transactionally based, because, you know, just on sake of time alone, you can't fit all those in to, like you said, the meet and greet line or whatever. So you have a history within the context of, you know, like you said, you played in the Greenery, and then, you know, we made the connection prior in regards to you playing in that band, The Messenger, which is that record isn't even like available anymore on streaming services or anything, is it? Because I've never even bothered to look.
Yeah, I haven't bothered to look either.
Interesting. Well, whatever. For those that want to do some deep internet research, it's a really good record. What's the name of the record again? Totally escaping my mind.
It's called Let's Get Dangerous.
There you go.
The Darkwing Duck reference.
Yes, Let's Get Dangerous. I love it. But anyways, good band. Way to not suck on that one. But so was it? would you kind of base your experience when people started to pay attention to what you were doing with This Wild Life, were you better equipped at kind of handling that sort of, attention because you already had played in bands that were, you know, I mean, by no stretch of the imagination were successful, but, you know, you did things as far as like touring and putting out records and stuff like that.
I don't think it really prepared me for it, because I hadn't been up front or writing the songs. I was always playing drums. So I think it was definitely like a bit of a stretch for me to start this. And like last time we talked, I said, it's like, you know, I didn't want to sing for this band. I didn't want to be a front man, because I just didn't think that I don't feel that I'm like a captivating kind of person. I don't think that I have like a ton of charisma to be like this up in your face front man. That was the start of the band being like, you know, more of a full band feel and pop punk kind of exciting stuff. And I'm definitely not equipped for that. I think I'm far better equipped for what we do now compared to kind of the initial direction of the band. But yeah, it's been tough for me. And I kind of explain it like, usually when you start writing songs, you write a bunch of crappy songs, and then maybe you record them, maybe you don't, and then that band breaks up, then you start another crappy band, write a handful of songs, release an EP, break up, and then you start your final like real band that's going to make a handful of records. And I didn't really have the luxury of writing all of those crappy songs that nobody would ever hear. Every crappy song that I've ever written is a This Wildlife song that's released and still on the internet.
Right.
You know, so it's like I've kind of just been growing as a songwriter and discovering what my voice is and what what my kind of songwriting style is right in front of people along the way. So it's kind of like interesting if you were to listen to like our, you know, small discography that it is front to back, you'd just be like, holy shit, what fucking happened to these guys? You know, cause it's such a stretch from where it was at the beginning. And it's been an interesting transition. It's like, I'm still challenged by it. Honestly, every day it's whether it's just singing, songwriting, trying to stay healthy on tour, you know, fan interactions, kind of discovering the line of where I can go lyrically and where I can't. It's like something that I've noticed for me, that's the hardest thing about being a singer personally, is finding that line of being specific and writing these songs that are things that I want to get off my chest, but also not like ruining relationships in my life or hurting people. And it's kind of this interesting thing that I found that I have a lot more guts in songwriting than I really do in the real world. And sometimes I'll call people out or situations out that I, in a song, that I absolutely would not do in person, because I'm just pretty non-confrontational. And so I've kind of had to learn how to push that to its boundaries without like really causing like a whole lot of hysteria in my life. So it's been a big learning process for me, big time.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I like how you equated the two in regards to, you know, you doing different duties within the band that you've played in, just because, yeah, I mean, it's such a huge shift when you are, you know, playing drums, and, you know, the joke is that no one pays attention to the drummer unless they're messing up. So so then, like, putting yourself out there and being in the front, you know, there is a huge learning curve with that. And to, like you said, to have splayed yourself out songwriting wise on like, hey, this is what I'm doing and this is what I'm like, and then having people pay attention to it. And then, you know, warts and all, as you grow, people yeah. like, oh yeah, like I hated their first record, but like their second record's good. Or people totally writing you off because they listened to your first record and they have no desire to listen to anything after that, even though you progress.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting to us that like in the early days we had played a lot of shows and tried to promote as much as we can, doing the full band stuff. And when we finally made the decision to go just down to the two piece and mainly focus on acoustic stuff, we had like almost no backlash, and we're like, wow, I guess like nobody really gave a shit about the old stuff, you know? Cause it was just like, we made a Facebook post explaining the situation and that we were going to go make a full length acoustic record. And we expected tons of backlash, cause at that point we had been a pop punk band for years. And then you just see a million comments that are just like, I'm so excited for this, this is awesome. And you're like, geez, like, I guess this is a good decision, but it's kind of sad that we spent so many years writing songs that nobody gave a shit about, I guess.
Totally. Like, yeah, we just threw those out there and yeah, no one said anything about them.
Yeah.
The you know, kind of along the influences and, you know, where you're coming from, it's, you know, funny that we're speaking while you guys are on tour with Dashboard Confessional, and people no matter what could draw the comparisons between what you're doing and what he has done and continues to do. I know that was kind of a backbone for where you were able to build off of. Did you, you know, as you started to play shows, you know, were they with bands that had nothing to do with what you were, as far as sonically sounding like, you know, were you playing a bunch of hardcore and punk shows, or were you kind of trying to, you know, maybe at least play like pop punk shows in order to make sure people weren't heckling you guys too bad, or where did you kind of sit?
Yeah, we actually didn't even really play shows with pop punk bands until, I don't know, maybe like a year and a half ago or so. We definitely didn't want to be playing coffee shops. We didn't want to be playing with singer-songwriters. We didn't feel like we fit in that world. That's not where we came from. It's not what we're familiar with. And it's honestly not even what we listen to. So we were always comfortable playing with heavier bands than us and full bands. We just always felt like it was a benefit to stick out rather than to fall in line. And I guess we were just never really scared to be the softest band on the bill. We were never scared for a hardcore band to come on after us. You know, we did a tour with Newfound Glory a couple years ago where Turnstile played after us. And as hilarious as that sounds, you know, how contrasted those two sets could be, it was a great tour for us. And, you know, like 6 months prior to that, we did a tour where Beartooth came on after us every night, and it's like, you know, you have a band that's as heavy as them coming on after you every night, you would think that the crowd would hate either one of you, but people are so open-minded these days with the genres that they listen to that, I mean, I see the same kid that's up front singing along to This Wildlife on a tour is, you know, headbanging and screaming along to Beartooth right after our set's over. So I just don't think it's as much of a problem, unless we went out with, like, I don't know, we're obviously not going to go out on tour with a band like Harm's Way or something like that. It's like, right. that's not going to make any sense whatsoever. And there is a line that needs to be drawn somewhere, but for the most part, we've never really turned down tours. I mean, I've talked with Keith from Every Time I Die about us touring together, and that seems like it would make no sense, and it might not, but we wouldn't be intimidated to go try it at least.
Yeah, totally. No, that's cool. I mean, that it gives the musical climate these days, you know, people have very, very diverse tastes just because music is so readily accessible, you know, whether or not they have the depth of familiarity that many people have with bands, you know, records, because that's the only record that they have, and they have to wait another 2 weeks to get their allowance money to buy a CD at Warehouse or whatever. But still, it's like everybody can like so many different things now in ways that you felt like, you know, whatever, maybe 10 years ago, there was real hard lines in the sand of like, oh yeah, like, you know, I do listen to this, but I don't listen to that.
Yeah, well, if the only place that you were getting music from was hxemp3.com, then obviously you're never going to hear, you know, the Cure record or something like that. You're going to be stuck in a bubble. But I think so many bands do like mixed bills these days, and obviously festivals are nuts these days with the kind of spectrum that the artists lay on genre-wise. People that are going to see this kind of stuff, I don't know, they're just a lot more open-minded, and I think it's awesome, because I feel like I've always been that way, because I was raised, my mom listened to so much Motown and R&B, funk, and like early West Coast hip-hop in the house when I was a kid, that rock wasn't even a thing to me until I was like, you know, 11 or 12, and from there, it's like I never like turned my back on what I listened to at some point. Like, I know a lot of people would just be like, oh, that sucks, like, that's a guilty pleasure, or I'm embarrassed that I listened to that. It's like, if you put on Limp Bizkit Significant Other right now, I would lose my mind and think that it was still a dope record. It's like, <Right. laughs> I don't know. I've just never gone back on what I listened to. I always recognize what was captivating about it for me at the time. And I still have, you know, a pretty open palette for music.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, I think a lot of that too is just you when... I think when you, I read some study where it was like maybe a year or two ago, where I think, you know, I can't remember what university looked at Spotify data, and I think quantified it down to the year in which people stopped seeking out new music. I think it was like 31, 32 years old, where people, you know, just basically stop. Like, they're like, I'm not going to listen to the new records by the new bands or whatever. I'm just, I got my records, like, I'm good, you know, and that's like, you know, your average music listener down to, you know, your hardcore music nerd. But I think to your point, the people that stay engaged are the ones that are, you know, not as ravenous as they once were for new music, but they still incorporate, you know, a couple records a year and sort of build on top of it, as opposed to just only listen to the, you know, their proverbial classics, so to speak.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time, just in the van when we're listening to records and stuff. Like, it's sometimes it can feel like difficult to not get jaded, and, you know, and I just always push myself to have an open mind and always check out new music. And I know for me personally that most of my absolute favorite records, the first time that I listen to them, I may not have got it, you know, and sometimes it's even from a band that you already love, and you listen to one of their new records and you're like, this doesn't really sound like what I was expecting or what I was hoping for from them. Doesn't sound like the last record. And so you kind of shelve it. And then maybe 2-3 months later, 6 months later, you go, I'm going to give that another shot. And then you listen to it again from this new perspective that's maybe a little more neutral. And you're like, holy shit, like, this is different, but fuck, this is cool, you know? And it's like, I just think that if you judge everything at face value right off the first listen, or associate it with the bands they tour with or the label that they're on, how the guys look, or any of those things, you're starting from such a negative standpoint that it's like, you're setting yourself up to not like it, and you're setting yourself up to be jaded. And I try to just neglect all of that kind of negativity when I'm listening to new records, because, you know, it's like I have an older brother who's like this incredible musician, but he's pretty close-minded with music. And especially when I was younger, you know, he would just bag on all the music that I listened to because it didn't sound like Primus or Mr. Bungle, you know. And I'm just like, dude, it's like there's so much great new music coming out now that, like, without a doubt, someday some of these records that I'm listening to are going to be considered classics to some extent. And for you to write off an entire, like, generation of new music because it wasn't your generation when you were younger is... it's so naive to think that there's nothing good coming out anymore. So
yeah,
I'm still constantly seeking new music out. And if something feels like it's getting stale, it's like, well, then start listening to a different genre. You know, I hadn't listened to like any hip hop in so many years. And just a couple years ago, I just decided, I'm like, I'm going to check out a handful of artists and see if there's anything that kind of grabs me. And I found, you know, a few rappers that I just absolutely love, and it totally like got me excited about listening to music again.
Yeah, that's great. That's what you got to do. Yeah, you got to. Sometimes you just got to realign. You're like, okay, well, maybe I'm gonna leave this one aside, and then I'll dig under another rock and then find a bunch of gems that I never would have checked out if it wasn't for me maybe not liking the state of punk music or whatever, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for every genre, for me personally, it's like, well, I'm not going to just like a genre as a whole. And it's like, if any band fits these, you know, these bullet points of what it means to be punk or what it means to be metalcore, I'm just going to like it just because it is that. It's like, you know, you kind of sift through it and find the bands that work for you and disregard the ones that don't. And it's like, I don't listen to a ton of like hardcore bands, but there's like a handful of them that I just think are fucking awesome, and I listen to them constantly. And you know, the same goes for funk and just regular punk and hip-hop, and it's, I don't know, there's so much exciting shit going on with music constantly that it's hard to keep up.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward.
You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Support for this podcast comes from Toyota and their new 2017 Highlander. If you're like me, when the weekend comes, you don't want to just sit around the house. You want to get out with the family, explore new places, and try new things. Maybe check out a science museum, hit a festival, or just head out into nature. Well, the new Toyota Highlander is the perfect vehicle for discovery. It starts on the outside with its sleek design and aggressive new front grille that say you have an attitude for adventure. Its improved powertrain makes it more fun to drive and more fuel efficient than ever. It has Toyota's Safety Sense technology, standard. And one of my favorite features is Driver Easy Speak, which lets you broadcast what you say to the rear seats so your passengers can hear you. It doesn't mean they'll listen, but they can at least hear you. So navigate to your nearest Toyota dealer or toyota.com and see why there's always more to discover in the new 2017 Highlander. Drivers are responsible for their own safe driving. Always pay attention to your surroundings and drive safely. Depending on the conditions of roads, weather, and the vehicle, the systems may not work as intended. See owner's manual for additional limitations and details. But the long and the short of it is Toyota Highlander is awesome. They're supporting podcasts. You need to check out this vehicle right away. Do it, please. You'll enjoy it. All right, now on with the show.
You know, kind of to your what you're talking about in regards to the fact that, you know, your mom was listening to so many styles of music and that, you know, opened up your eyes to the fact that, you know, music was important. So in your house, it was basically you and your brother and her, and she was, you know, hustling to make everything happen for you guys as a single mom, because your dad was out of the picture when you were like one or two, right?
My dad left when my mom was pregnant with me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, you, because of that, you had no relationship with him. You know, did the closeness in which, you know, you and your brother and your mom, the bond that you guys created, do you think that was a function of kind of, I don't know, I don't want to paint a picture of like survival where you guys were like living from, you know, paycheck to paycheck sort of scenario, but like, do you feel that relationship grew closer between all three of you because of your circumstance?
Yeah, for sure. It's like, obviously when you're a kid, you're just so dependent on your folks. And when you only have one of them, you just like, you become super close with them, obviously. And my brother and I are 6.5 years apart. So, you know, it's like that generation gap between us, there was like a time where he was out doing, you know, ratchet shit with his friends that, you know, I'm too young to even like go and partake in. So I just would spend a lot of time with my mom. And, you know, it's like, we always talk about how we had, you know, Friday night was like our date night, and we would always go to like my favorite restaurant in the world because of that is Soup Plantation. And I know most people think it's horrible, but that's just like, but I just associate it with always going there on Friday nights with my mom. And yes, and to this day, we're just still super close. And I don't know, we just always talk about, it's like, you need to take care of each other. And my mom always uses the term like pool your resources. And, you know, it's like, none of us have ever made good money, me, my brother, or my mom. So definitely leaning on each other to this day, you know, just to make things work. It's, we're a really, really close family.
Sure, sure. That's awesome. You know, and kind of to that point, like, did you, you know, because of the lyrical nature of, you know, This Wild Life, and basically anybody that is a sort of, you know, coming from a singer-songwriter background as far as like, oh, it's just me and my guitar doing this thing, you know, people always immediately put the heart in the sleeve adjective on that sort of stuff. Do you feel that the experiences, you know, of your previous bands, because you weren't, you know, writing the music and that sort of stuff, did you feel that you were totally just kind of like, I don't know, out of your depth when you first started expressing yourself this way? Or did you feel like even just a sliver of confidence by being like, oh, now I can kind of do my own thing?
I don't know. I definitely was not confident starting off. Like, you know, we initially wanted to have a different singer for This Wild Life, and I had to push myself to step in those shoes. And I think when I first started writing like lyrics, when I was younger, all I cared about was drums and the music. So I really didn't care about lyrics as so much as I cared about melody and just feeling. And I think I started really, really focusing on lyrics and kind of just like song meanings and as a whole, I didn't really start focusing on that until I started singing for the band. So it's totally changed the way that I listen to music. I think it's pretty funny. Like when I listened to records when I was a kid, I knew every drum lick, every guitar part, every bass part. But I didn't even know, you know, half the lyrics to the songs that I loved. And now when I hear a song, I pretty much know all the lyrics, and I could not tell you a single drum fill or anything in these songs. Like if I tried to air drum along to one of my favorite records, I would just butcher it, because I think I used to see songs in like full color, and now I feel like I see them in black and white. I see them even simpler than I did before, even though I've technically had more experience with songwriting than any other point in my life. I see songs a lot more simply now. I try to just like try to take them in from the listener's perspective rather than a musician's perspective.
No, that's cool. That's especially too when you're just starting off, like expressing yourself in, you know, whatever medium. You know, that stuff can become, you know, pretty dated pretty quickly, and you're probably not even putting thought into the level of confidence. You're just like, well, I'm just going to try this thing, and hopefully it's not too bad.
Yeah, it's tough for me. I still can't like write with other people in the room. Anthony and I, it's like, you know, for years we lived like three blocks from each other, and now, you know, now we're a little further apart, but when we were making the last record, we were still only like 20 minutes from each other. And there's only one song on the record that we wrote in the room together. We would typically just send ideas back and forth. And for me, I still like, even with Anthony, who's heard me on my best and my worst days vocally, I can't sing something for the first time with somebody else in the room. I just have to flesh out ideas on my own. Cause I have to be in that space where there's nobody judging me but myself. Cause I'm already fucking plenty hard on myself, you know?
Right.
So it's like, I don't need somebody else that is going to be like, oh, I don't know about that, when I haven't fully like fleshed out an idea. So it's still a big challenge for me on every song that we write.
Yeah, no, that's, I like you describing that, because I mean, I think everybody has their own process, and there's nothing that's easy about, you know, getting the art that is inside of you out of you. And so I think that's I really like the illustration of your experience with that, because yeah, everyone's got their own ways, and some are, you know, 10 times weirder, and sometimes they're like the most normal thing possible. They're like, oh yeah, I can just, you know, go into a vocal booth and like sing. And it's like, wait, what? What are you talking about? Like, I gotta like light candles and like roll around the floor, or like do push up. You know, so there's, everybody has their own way of getting it out of them.
Yeah, I'm not so, it's not so bad in the studio for me as it is just getting the song to where it needs to be before I go into the studio. Like we have a pretty thorough demoing process. I mean, it's so easy to record these days, not well, but you know, at least in terms of just like pre-production and demos, that we dig pretty deep into a song before we even hit the studio with it. So sometimes by the time we're recording it in the studio, that's like version three of the song, because we've already kind of refined it. And you know, it's like, I've already dug into the lyrics and the melody completely before we take them in.
Yeah, it makes sense. You've gone through the motions, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Just, you know, you've definitely put the songs through the ringer. So that way, when you're in the studio, that you feel a little more confident that everything's already sort of hammered out. You know, because you have, you know, been doing this for a little bit in regards to this wildlife, was there any other kind of path that you were trying to pursue in regards to, you know, a career and school and all that sort of stuff? Or was it like, oh, everything is kind of just noise and music is what I need to focus on, whatever that means, I'm just going to focus on that?
I mean, I barely graduated high school. I'm not an idiot, but I'm not the most intelligent person in the world. And I realize what my weaknesses are at a pretty young age. I realized that just like math was not going to be my thing, and memorization is horrible for me. And my attention span for those kinds of subjects is just absolutely horrendous. And I think I realized early on that school wasn't going to be my thing. So I've never had a backup plan. I mean, I've just always worked whatever kind of side jobs that I could do, like manual labor, just to, you know, keep keep paying my bills so that I can continue playing music. So I've never had a backup plan. And even the years in between my last band that toured and this wildlife touring, it was never even a thought to go to school because I just don't think I'd be successful.
Right. You're like, yeah, I know what my lane is, and it's not academics.
Yeah. Well, it's like I joke around about, you know, Anthony got his like third tattoo was on his neck, and it's just like, you know, the job stopper, but it's also the thing that, you know, probably makes it so you have to have the drive. Hey, I have to make this work. And for me, I don't have to have a neck tattoo for that. I just realized I'm an idiot. I'm not going to be able to be like successful at school. I have to make this work. So,
sure.
And honestly, it's the only thing that I care about. It's the only thing that I love doing. So it's kind of a no brainer. It, in some way, it does scare me though, 'cause I know that it will end eventually. And I still have no fucking clue what I'll do after I play music.
Right, right. Yeah, well, like you said, there will be a time where, you know, you could transition into other things that are at least tangentially related to music, and that way you still feel comfortable with it.
Well, it definitely won't be accounting at a label or anything.
Right. It's, speaking of that, like, because, you know, playing in bands involves business as far as, you know, booking shows and everything else. Like, even though you're not viewing it as, you know, business and learning life skills, it is. So, like, did you handle any of that for any of your previous bands, or was this wildlife kind of your first taste of that as you started to, you know, work with, you know, labels and all that sort of stuff?
I've always been really hands-on and like more in the creative aspect of it, whether it comes to like merch or just like language when you're posting stuff online, and that's always been more of my thing. And luckily Anthony is like a total numbers guy, and he's like super, super driven and organized in that aspect. And I think that kind of like comes full circle even to our songwriting. We both have strengths and weaknesses, and we've gotten to this point where we know what each of us is good at. And I don't even worry about, you know, money or just like kind of like fine detail stuff of, you know, like tour managing. Anthony tour manages us. Well, we will never hire somebody to do that. A, because we can't afford it, and B, because it would just be a frivolous expense because Anthony's so good at it. And, you know, and then I'm more of like the, you know, I'm not a gearhead by any means. I don't really care about gear more than what we need to make our show work well. But that's kind of an area that I'm proficient at. So I set up all of our gear. I program our light show for tour. I work with, you know, Click Tracks and everything just to make the show work and make it kind of creative. And that's my world. So it's like, you know, I couldn't tell you how to run the books for our tour and accounting for that stuff. And Anthony can do that. And he couldn't, you know, plug in our mixer and make our show work. So we kind of just stay in our own lanes and it works well.
No, that's good. You definitely always, I mean, you see that in any band where you have, you know, you're one to maybe two people who are good at that, you know, being able to communicate with the label or, you know, being able to, you know, organize a tour and that sort of stuff. And then you have the people who, you know, rightfully are just like, I don't care about any of that. Let me just focus on like, you know, songwriting or like you said, merch, all those, you know, the creative aspects of the band. It gets messy when people think that they're good at one aspect of that, but they're not actually. And that's when things get kind of messy where you're like, dude, stop booking horrible shows for us, man. That's not what we need to do.
Yeah, we say it all the time. It's like sometimes there's just too many cooks in the kitchen, and you're better off delegating work to the people that are most, you know, equipped to handle those tasks. And like I said, I mean, I know what my weaknesses are, and I'm not here to try to even improve them. I'm just here to do what I'm good at.
Sure. Yeah. I'm here to do my job, sir.
Yeah. I just work here, man. I don't know.
That's awesome. I like that. You should totally just have a shirt like, or a little sign that you hang up on your amp where it's like, oh yeah, I'm just here to work. That's all. I can't answer any other questions about anything.
I'm actually going to make a t-shirt to wear on stage that says, I just work here, man.
Dude, I easily see that up on your merch rack and people. And then just like in really tiny font, just like this wildlife right below it. Perfect.
By the way, I'm not cutting you into this. I think you helped me to the idea, but I think it's mine.
No, that's fine. I'll take 0.001% of that. That's fine.
Yeah, you'll see your 13-cent royalty check at the end of the quarter.
Just rolling right in.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
So that, you know, we kind of touched on this earlier, but, you know, because of your, like you said, the accessibility of, you know, you guys as, you know, artists from, you know, hanging out at shows, you know, doing a lot of meet and greets, all those other things we were talking about earlier. You know, there does get a heavy nature just because, like you said, you are more comfortable expressing yourself, you know, in a confrontational manner with songs. And, you know, because of that, people find the connectivity with you and want to come up to you and talk about, you know, their tough breakups or moments in their life where, you know, your band helped them through a difficult situation. And obviously that's a very precious moment and it's exciting to share those things. But did you have to get used to kind of the way that people approached you in regards to that? Because I know that it can kind of become overwhelming immediately when it's like, oh, whoa, like this song that I wrote just in my bedroom, and now it's having this emotional resonance with a person, and they're coming at me with some pretty heavy emotions. How have you been able to kind of navigate that?
I think it's tough, and the best way I can explain it is that for me, it's like, you know, I'm just barely getting by doing what I do, and my way of dealing with, you know, some of my frustrations or my own struggles are through songwriting. And, you know, it's like, I feel like it's so corny to say like, that's like, oh, that's my release or something like that. But I think there's some merit to it. And, I always just tell people, it's like, I am not qualified to like, I will absolutely listen. And like, I do care, but I know that I'm not qualified to tell you how to deal with it, because I don't even think I'm qualified to make my own fucking decisions. You know, it's like, I'm still figuring things out, and I'm in, you know, by no means an expert. So a lot of times if, you know, if somebody me online saying they're struggling with something, I'll hear them out and just be like, you know, I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm glad that our music is some kind of support system for you. That's what music is for me, whether I'm writing it or listening to it. That's my support system. But, you know, I try to like link them to things like, you know, Heart Support, which is like Jake from August Burns Red's kind of endeavor with, you know, it's like an emotional support group basically. And I just think that there are a lot better places to go than talking to me, because I'm just, like I said, I'm just not qualified.
Right. Totally. You're like, I can barely kind of walk through these things on my own, let alone be able to offer you any sort of sage-like advice. But I mean, that's obviously, it's responsible of you. So good job.
I don't want to give somebody bad advice. I learn the hard way always. That's like the only way that I learn any lessons. So I'm not going to make somebody else go through that.
And, you know, kind of along those same lines, and something, honestly, I don't really regularly talk about on the show, but something I find interesting where, you know, because you've made the transition from, you know, being a drummer and like we were joking about earlier, no one paying attention to you, and then people paying attention to you, you know, because you're the singer and you're, you know, doing, you're front and center. You know, how did you navigate the attention that you got from what I'm presuming? I presume your sexual orientation is straight.
I am.
So once girls started to pay attention to you, which I'm sure was kind of a novel idea, just because, you know, anytime that starts to happen, it's like, wait, why is this girl who really I probably would never have a quote unquote chance with, like, caring about what I'm doing? How did you navigate that sort of attention? Once it started to happen to you?
Honestly, I don't think, I'm just not like a lady killer whatsoever. So it's not a huge issue. I never was, never will be. I've kind of always had girlfriends. I consider myself a bit of like a serial monogamist. So I honestly, like, I felt like when I was younger, I was just like, I've always been like pretty goofy looking, like, you know, I'm not like traditionally attractive. And I just think I never really had girls like give me the time of day when I was younger, and I always had like a long-term girlfriend. I dated the same girl from when I was 12 to 21, so I entirely missed out on that whole stage of like dating and learning how to talk to girls,
right?
Because I was already in a relationship. Like, I was with, you know, I thought I was going to be the exception to the rule of, you know, nobody marries their high school sweetheart or whatever. I met her when I was in seventh grade, but so I just never paid much attention to it. I just dressed like a dork and just never shaved, never had a haircut or anything. I was just always a goon, I guess. And sure. I think as I got a little older and started like paying attention to like my appearance and trying to like at least fit some mold of not looking like a complete slob on stage, that when I started getting a little bit of attention from girls, I kind of like resented it, 'cause I'm like, shit, I've been here the whole time. Like, where were you when I was taking the bus?
I like that. You take it personally. You're like, come on, just because I combed my hair today, like, now you're paying attention to me? Really?
Yeah. Just 'cause I got a fade, you know, for the first time in my life, doesn't mean you guys should be giving me attention now. But
right.
Yeah. Honestly, I've never like cared to like date a girl who's like a fan of the band or anything like that. And I don't know. We don't use our platform to try to meet a bunch of girls or anything like that. It's just, that's not what we're about. And I think because Anthony and I have both played in unsuccessful bands in the past, and it took so long to get this Wildlife off the ground, that, and we take it incredibly seriously. Like, as big of idiots as we could both be, we're also very, very professional with our band. And we just don't fuck around, man. We don't want to ruin our own opportunity, because I truly think that this is my last shot at being successful with music. And because of how strenuous it is to like start a band and find out what works and what doesn't, I just know for a fact, like, if this Wildlife breaks up, I'm never going to start another band. Like, I just don't think I have it in me to, like, it's like heartbreaking when a band breaks up and things go wrong and it feels like it's not going to work. And I don't want to go through it again. I just want to make this work, because I love what we've created so far, and I never want to fuck that up by trying to, you know, hook up with a bunch of girls or, you know, get one over on anybody in any regards. Like, we really, on tour, we like try not to step on any toes. We're always just super respectful of everybody's crew, and we just try to hustle, man. It's like, last night we're playing in Fort Lauderdale, and after the show, it's like, you know, everybody's going out to bars and stuff. And it's like, I'm just out there cranking out CDs, trying to hustle and get some money in our gas tank. You know, it's like we've been out on tour for 6 weeks and we've gotten two hotels the whole time. We're just sleeping in the van every night just to save money and, you know, create more longevity for ourselves and have more money that we can reinvest back into the band. And me going out and drinking and talking to a bunch of girls and stuff, it's like, that's just going to cloud my vision, and it's not going to lead to anything good.
Right. That's, yeah, I like that. I mean, it's distracting. It's one of those things that, the idea of it may be nice, but like you said, the notion of it, like in practice, it's just like, well, that's not even something like that. That's really that meaningful, you know? Like, I mean, the idea of, you know, meeting a girl to show and then, you know, making out with her and then being like, oh, like, what was that? I'm like, well, that was it. Like, that's like literally all that it is. And like you said, ultimately taking your eye off the fact that it's like, well, yeah, I, you know, probably could have been doing something, you know, productive, like for,
yeah,
for the band at that particular moment or whatever.
I just know for me, it's like, you know, my family as a whole kind of struggles with addiction, and I've never done a single drug because I know that I can't handle it. And I know that the reason that people do drugs is because they're probably fucking awesome, and everybody has, you know, like, they obviously can ruin your fucking life. I know that much. Like, you know, all too well, but the reason people do them is because they have a lot of fun doing them. And I know that I'm not equipped to handle that. So I stay away from them entirely. And,
for me,
I do drink, but I've found that drinking and touring is just like such a bad combination for me. I never feel lonelier or more lost than I'm when I'm just like drunk sitting there looking at my cell phone on tour, just like kind of with nowhere to go. Or it's just like, I guess I'm just gonna fucking go sit in the van because it's hot here, or there's nowhere to sit there. And
right,
that's like, I get in my own head in that situation. And for like the last year or so, I've just tried to stay away from it. You know, maybe I'll crack a beer after a set, you know, every other few days, but that's just to wind down. And I try to keep it at that, because for me, it's a total trigger of spiraling out of control. And I have a hard time stopping once I start. And, you know, it's like the last thing I want to do is make a fool out of myself or get so sick that I can't perform the next day. Or I just don't want to jeopardize anything that we're doing here, because it's fucking special to me. And I know I'm lucky that we're here.
Yeah, no, I really like that that perspective on it, because all the other things that you experience, the lifestyle that bands lead, the rest of it's just noise when you're cutting down to the idea that, like, hey, I'm here to, you know, perform, entertain, create connections with people and between people. And then everything else that you experience from, you know, loading in, waiting, selling merch, all the other stuff is just kind of, you know, noise when you focus to the thing that actually matters the most.
Yeah.
The the last thing I want to hit on was the you know, since the band is, you know, growing incrementally, where it's like people are paying attention to you, you're able to do, you know, larger tours. And like you said, I mean, you're on tour with Dashboard Confessional right now, which, you know, whatever, 2 years ago, you probably would have been like, it doesn't make any sense. There's no way we could do that.
2 months ago, I wouldn't have thought this was possible.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Sorry. Maybe 2 weeks ago, but then you were already on this tour. But, you know, as these things get bigger, but, you know, you are attempting to have the same sort of connectivity that you guys have always had at your shows. Is there a struggle with the idea of being like, okay, you know, when we're going to go out on our headliner, we're going to be playing, you know, bigger venues than we had the run before? Or are you guys trying to find that sort of, like, you know, middle ground where it's like, okay, the venues are still reasonably sized and we still feel that same sort of intimacy, and we're not blowing it out to where, you know, it's just warm bodies in a room.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Like with our show, the intimacy definitely creates a better atmosphere for our shows. You know, we've done bigger. We've played in like kind of like small arenas at times with opening up for other bands. We've done, you know, bigger theaters with bands like House of Blues size stuff and up. We've done the amphitheaters on Warped Tour where you're outdoors. We've done the, you know, main stage on Warped Tour, you know, a handful of times. And to us, I still think that the club level is where, like, our music really shines and where we can keep things where we can kind of control the environment, make sure it's dark when we want it, make sure it's quiet when we want it. And on our headline shows, having that control over the environment and over the way that the show is going to be performed, that's the best case scenario for us. And I think we definitely have learned how to play in some of these bigger rooms, and we are like very, very attentive to crowd response when we're doing, especially like support tours. Like I have no problem saying, like, the beginning of this tour, you know, we played three nights at Irving Plaza in New York, all sold out, and they were some of the worst shows we've ever played. And it's not because we played like shit, but it's because we didn't have the right set list together to captivate a new audience that's a little older, and maybe, you know, they're just there for nostalgic reasons to see Dashboard, or, you know, they're drinking and they don't really care about the opening bands. They're just walking in and who gives a fuck. But it, you know, it took us like not until the sixth show of this tour did we find the right set list that would grab their attention. And it's pretty crazy. You can totally, see like the results of it in your merch sales and how many people come up and talk to you after the show. And, you know, it's like I said, I'm out selling CDs after the show every night. We're doing this thing where for the first time we're doing name your own price on these CDs. And it's like, it's kind of tough because we pay the label $5 a piece for them. And sometimes somebody just hands you a buck and you're like, fuck, I just lost the band $4, but at least, you know, they took the CD, you know. It's like, and luckily some people are generous, you know, and they'll give you the $5 or they'll give you the $10. And sometimes they'll give you $20 and be like, hey, I know what it's like. And, you know, it's like, but we realize that, well, halfway through the tour, we were like, we're not selling enough CDs. We're not getting the music out there enough. We don't have a backdrop up that says our name. So, you know, people are leaving like, hey, what were you guys called again? And it's like, fuck, what was the point of playing in front of all these people, this huge opportunity, if they're going to walk away from the show and not even know who the hell we are? And so we're just like, all right, let's try to sell the CDs for $5. Let's just make them flat. We won't make a dime, but hopefully we'll spread the word better. And then we tried that and it was like pretty good. And we're like, shit, let's just blow them out. I'm going to go yell at people as they're leaving the venue to buy CDs, and, you know, quadruple the sales that we had that, you know, the night before. And it's like, we're constantly learning how to perform. And aside from that, how to have like the most productive time on tour. And it's like, every time you discover something new and you're like, holy shit, this works, but that didn't, you're like, fuck, I wish we would have known that 10 shows ago. Cause imagine how much more we could have grown in that city or this city. So it's, I mean, we're constantly trying new things and we're very, very attentive to results.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I mean, I like that. The idea of not resting on your laurels, and because I think the idea is that, you know, as you grow in size with a band, you have every opportunity to be lazier in many respects, you know, because you either have people working for you that do that, or, you know, whatever. Like there's a lot of different outs that you can have. And I think the bands that, you know, like I'll use a random band for an example, because, you know, just because I'm close to so many of the members of the band, Circus Survive. It's like the, you know, they like, yeah, they have techs, but like, you know, they set up their own equipment. Like they're still like, there's just so many things that they do where they're just like, yeah, I don't want to remove that aspect of playing in a band because like, then it'll feel weird. And it's like, yeah, you're right. Like it'd feel weird if all of a sudden, like you just like are in your green room for, you know, 6 hours and then you walk out and someone hands you a guitar and then like you do this thing and then you go away. And it's like, that's not the world that, you know, you and I have come from.
Yeah. I don't expect to just walk on stage and like, know everything's going to work. It's like, I plug everything in, you know, it's like, that's like my job. I'm just a huge control freak. Like I can't, like if there's like snow on the roads or night drives and stuff like that, I literally just can't sleep if somebody else is driving. Cause I'm just like, I don't know. I just get really anxious and get terrified that I'm going to be launched out the windshield of our van. So it's like, I still do the majority of the driving because I'm just, not because I want to, because I have to, just for my sanity, you know?
Right.
And that's how I feel about, you know, the same way about walking onto stage. We've, you know, we have a tech kind of, he's our merch guy and he tunes guitars in between songs, but I'm still the one who goes and patches everybody's, you know, monitoring every night and sends all the lines to front of house. You know, it's like, and we have like this totally isolated setup that like, if something's wrong, it's because I did something wrong and I have to know how it works and know what I could have done wrong. Cause I just we can't depend on other people. We never have been able to. And everything that we do, we try to make it so that we are in control of it, so that if something goes wrong, you have nobody to blame but yourself.
Yeah, sure. Right, exactly. You'd be like, well, can't lean on anybody for this. Like, I messed this up, and hopefully I know how to fix it for the future.
Yeah.
Well, dude, Kevin, I honestly really appreciate you, you know, connecting, getting on the show. And yeah, this is a really awesome chat for me. And I hope it was all that you anticipated and more.
Yeah, it's awesome. I know I told you earlier, but I haven't said it on this one, that I love the podcast. And podcasts for me in like the last year of touring have been so awesome for drives, especially night drives and stuff, just to keep me attentive. And I'm so engaged with everything that's going on, and especially with like your show, there's been so many guests that have come on that because I listen to it, it like makes me think, fuck, I got to check out that record. And maybe it's a band that I've heard about a million times and I just haven't gotten to checking them out. And then, you know, it's like, God, that was such a great conversation. That person is so cool. I want to dig into that. And that's been really helpful for me too, musically, just not being jaded, like hearing people's stories and getting to kind of know some of their personality so that I can go into a record with some kind of mindset of who these people are. It's been a really cool kind of experience for me. So I'm stoked to do this kind of stuff, because I think that it could totally translate to other people, you know, maybe that have seen a picture of us and been like, oh, they're acoustic. I thought they were like a two-piece metalcore band or something. Like, totally. So many people that would, you know, see like, oh, Epitaph Records are called This Wildlife. They're probably some like crunkcore band or something, you know, like,
yeah.
So totally. Hopefully people would give us a shot.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, that's the whole, you know, one of the main tenets of the show is just the fact that it's like, once you hear a person's story and you hear where they're coming from, no matter if you really, really identify with their music or not, you realize the common threads that all of us have that are attached to this, you know, weird music scene. No matter how big it gets, it still is rooted in the idea of just like, all right, like, I'm just going to figure this out myself. And we all have those same sort of origin stories, even though maybe they may be generationally different. It doesn't matter. They're still, you know, important. But I can guarantee you that for the fact that people will listen to this and they will be like, hey, I'll listen to that band. It's not so bad. I kind of like that Kevin guy. He's a nice guy.
Nice guy. Bad music.
Yeah.
Great bowler. Nice guy.
Totally. Hey, that's all you need, man. As long as people are like, hey, Kevin, worst person ever. And his band's terrible, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to fight against.
Well, there was my discussion with Kevin. Great guy, right? Yep. I just really enjoyed discussing all things music with him. And do me a big favor. So go to castsurvey.net. So CASTSURVEY.net, and take like a 5-question survey. It will help out the show a tremendous amount in regards to some of the sponsors that we've had recently. So please do that, because it would just, I would really, really enjoy that. 5 questions will take like 30 seconds. So yeah, that's that. And thank you very much to Kevin for wanting to come on the show. Please listen to Lowercase Noises. They provide all the music for the show. Just Google him and you will be able to find out all of the great music that he has. He has a new record coming out at some point in the near future. I have heard it. It is absolutely spectacular. So what else should I tell you? Oh, I should tell you the guest for next week, right? Tom May from the Menzingers. I had a great conversation with him. Their new record is unbelievable. It could be one of my favorites of the year. And I just had to have one of the dudes on here. And it was, oh man, such a good convo. Because he was, just down to hang. I love people. Like, I can tell within 30 seconds of a conversation that this is going to be a good podcast. And Tom exactly delivered on that. So there you go. That's all the business for today. So please go and enjoy the rest of your time with whatever you're doing, whether you're running on a treadmill or riding a bike or cleaning your house, whatever it is. And I hope you enjoy it. And please be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
Shh.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's betterhelp.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.